I'm going to shift gears a little bit here and talk about a different population and a different end of the expert spectrum. So our study was done in Northeast Tennessee, which is a very rural area, low income but very rural, and I'm going to talk about the pre-screen process as opposed to some of the outcomes. All right, I have nothing to disclose. All right, so in terms of some background, one of the things that we struggle with in primary care is to identify patients who are at risk for using drugs and alcohol. We tend to do much better at identifying those who are dependent. And so when we look at someone who comes into a primary care setting, usually those who have used to the point where it's affecting their health, it's affecting social aspects of their life, those are the people that we can identify fairly readily in primary care. The challenge becomes finding those people who are at early risk. And so those are the ones, obviously, that we have the most to offer in terms of early intervention to avoid some of the health problems. But those are the people who remain a challenge for us to try to identify with some success with high rates of sensitivity and specificity in primary care settings. And we found that if we can identify them early, of course, we can avoid a lot of the negative health consequences that we see with dependence. All right, so the ESPERT model was developed some time ago, and it tends to be the standard that we see that works well in primary care and other settings to identify patients who are at early risk for substance use problems. And so the ESPERT acronym, everybody in the room is probably aware, for screening, brief intervention, and referral to treatment. And so it's a process. So someone comes into a setting, in particular primary care, which is where I work, and we screen them, and we do an initial pre-screening. We put them through a more rigorous screening. We identify them. We offer them some sort of intervention. Those who are at greatest risk, then we tend to refer out for treatment if we can't handle them in-house. So that's the basic process. SAMHSA and NIH also have invested fairly significant money in ESPERT models. And so looking at how does it work in different settings, what are some of the outcomes that we see, how effective is it, what are some of the characteristics of ESPERT that are more effective than others. So there's a lot of active funded ESPERT projects going on across the country. In Tennessee, we received a large grant from SAMHSA to do fairly statewide ESPERT activities, and so we have multiple sites across the state. What I'm going to talk about today is our three sites that are in Northeast Tennessee, because that's where we have something rather interesting that we found with the pre-screening process. All right, so the basic process is this. Someone comes in and they go through what's called a pre-screen. So in our primary care settings, anyone who comes in is pre-screened. They receive two questions, one for alcohol, one for drugs. If they are negative on those questions, the person who's doing the pre-screen, in our case it's a triage nurse, provides positive affirmation. That's great, glad to hear that you're not, you know, whatever it is with alcohol or drugs. If they're positive on the pre-screen, then it triggers a full screen. And so in our case, we have staff who come in and we'll do a full screen. So currently, the ESPERT guidelines recommend brief pre-screening for all patients annually. So once per year when they come in to see a provider, the recommendation is they get that screen, often in the context of a preventative or a wellness type of visit, but once per year is the recommendation. Well, what we found when we got going in our primary care clinics, we unfortunately were starting this up at the same time that we were implementing our EHR. And so there were a lot of challenges. We thought, great, the EHR is going to help us with finding when people need their annual screen. Didn't happen. So what we found was, in order to not miss people, we together with our triage nurses decided we would just pre-screen everyone at every visit. That way we wouldn't miss anyone. And that was actually a suggestion that came from our triage nurses. We were afraid that was going to be a bigger burden for them. They found that easier. And so we set ourselves up for a unique situation where we could start to look at, does more than annual pre-screening help? Okay, so is there any benefit to looking at people and asking them every time? So me being the researcher I am, I started looking at the literature immediately when we realized we were going to do this. And there's only one published study that looks at more than annual pre-screening in an ESPERT model. Very different population than what we're dealing with. This was at a Veterans Administration facility, an outpatient facility. And they found that about 6% of patients had a subsequent positive pre-screen after an initial negative pre-screen. Okay, so a small but reasonable number of people were later disclosing substance use. It was unclear why, whether it was changes in behavior or whether it was increased disclosure. All right, so we had two primary objectives when we started looking at our data. And the first was, does pre-screening for substance use beyond a single annual pre-screening lead to additional disclosure of risky substance use in primary care practice? All right, the second thing we wanted to look at, though, was whether there were differences between the people who initially screened positive compared to those who didn't screen positive until later. So looking to see if perhaps there was some sort of profile of the typical person who may not disclose until later. All right, so in terms of our methods, these were only adults. This was a family practice, but we only looked for this particular project at adults 18 years or older at three family medicine residency clinics, so fairly busy practices with a lot of providers. And we asked the two recommended ESPRT pre-screening questions. So the first one was related to alcohol. How many times in the last 12 months have you had more than 5 drinks per occasion for men, 4 drinks for women, so the typical binge question. And then the second was, how many times in the last year have you used an illicit drug or took a prescription medication other than as prescribed? Okay, if someone answered yes to either of those two questions, indicating more than zero, they were considered positive on the pre-screen. And as I said, we did this at every clinic visit. All right, so overall, during the study period, in our first 2 years of the process here at these three clinics, we had over 7,300 adult patients who were pre-screened using the two questions. Of these, we had about 5,500 who had at least one subsequent clinic visit. So we limited our sample to those who had an opportunity to tell us at least twice whether or not they were using substances. Participants were quite representative of the demographics of the region, largely white. This is Northeast Tennessee. In primary care settings, we tend to see more females than males. Our average participant was also slightly over 40 years of age, well, I guess closer to 50. All right, so here's what we found in terms of the multiple pre-screens. So when we look at everyone who was pre-screened, we had about 14% who on their initial pre-screen disclosed risky drug or alcohol use. But we had an additional 5% of all of our pre-screened people who were pre-screened that later admitted. So they were negative initially. They said, no, I'm not using alcohol at this level. I'm not using illicit drugs. But then when we asked them a second or third time, about 5% then popped positive on our pre-screen. Okay, so very similar to what the VA study found. But if you look at it in terms of the percentage of positive pre-screen, so if we limit our sample to only those people who pre-screen positive, a third of them were not disclosing until a later screen. So if we had only done annual screening, we would have missed about a third of the people that we ended up actually providing services for. All right, so when we compare those who were initially positive on the pre-screen with those who were not positive until later, there really wasn't a clear pattern of differences in terms of background factors. About the only thing that we found with background factors was there was a gender difference, so women were more likely to disclose later compared to men. Okay, so they were denying use at the first ask. But where we saw a difference was with the substance. And so when it was alcohol, people were much more likely to admit or to screen, pre-screen positive at the first ask. So the first time we asked them if the drug was alcohol, they were much more likely to say, yes, I'm drinking at this level. When it was drugs, however, we found that they were much more likely not to admit to the drug use until a second or later pre-screen. And then when we looked at those who were using alcohol and using drugs, again, the same type of pattern in terms of need for treatment. So they were screening at higher levels if it was alcohol initially, but if you look at the full screen results for the drugs, we were seeing them needing levels of treatment at higher levels when they screened pre-screen positive the second time. So here's a breakdown for the alcohol, and as you can see, when you compare the initial positive pre-screen, okay, these would be the levels of outcome. So negative would be the first one, and then the increasing level of severity of their problem. And you see that the levels are higher in terms of the need for treatment at the initial. So again, if it's alcohol, they're admitting it up front in the first pre-screen, and they're much more likely at that point to need treatment. So the ones who are later admitting to alcohol use, it tends to be lower levels of use. Okay, the reverse was true, though, for drug use. So they were much more likely to not admit until they were asked a second, third, or fourth time. And those who were admitting later were much more likely to need higher levels of treatment. So they were full screening at a much higher level. All right, so in terms of our conclusions, as I said, 1/3 of our patients were positive for risky levels of alcohol or other substance use were not identified until a subsequent clinic visit. So had we not done these multiple pre-screens, we would have missed 1/3 of the people that we eventually provided services for. There was no clear pattern related to the patients most likely to initially deny use. So, you know, we went into the thinking, well, maybe we can find the people that we need to target and always ask versus maybe we don't need to do this with everyone. And we really didn't see any sort of pattern in terms of the demographics. So, you know, somebody higher income, low income, whatever it is, there doesn't seem to be a pattern in terms of when they admit. Alcohol users, though, obviously, as I said, much more likely to report use on an initial screen and to be heavier users when they initially admitted, but the reverse was true for the drug users. They were admitting later. All right, so then the obvious question becomes, why would a patient initially be negative but subsequently positive for alcohol and drug use? So first of all, it could be true differences in behavior. So you have someone with episodic use. So when we asked them the first time, they were being truthful. They had not engaged in any binge drinking in the last 12 months. They hadn't used an illicit drug in the last 12 months. And then later, 3 months later, 4 months later, they had. Okay, so that would be an example of true differences in behavior. What we more were likely to suspect was happening was it was a failure to initially disclose. And so somebody, when they were asked the first time, was not yet ready to tell us about their alcohol and drug use. So this would suggest something like needing to build trust with the person who's asking the question. And I really think this is supported by the finding that of what we found with the drug users. And so it was the drug users who were much more likely to admit later compared to those using alcohol. So the drug use is illegal. It can have ramifications for their legal status as well as their insurance. And so that's something they might not tell you on a first visit, but after repeated asking, you build trust, you build rapport, and they're much more likely to disclose. We also suspect that the discussion of substance use by our providers. So we implemented ESPRT. We trained our providers to talk about substances with the patients. As we started doing that more and more, they were talking with their patients about the health consequences. That information over and over again, eventually, well, yeah, I am drinking, or maybe I am using drugs because you're willing to talk to me about this, so let's have a conversation. So it kind of started that conversation with the provider. And then there's also the issue of the type of appointment. And so we didn't really see a difference in our sample, but I suspect when we start looking at the bigger numbers, we have now pre-screened about 20,000 people across the state, that we're starting to see that people are pre-screening positive at higher rates at wellness visits compared to acute visits, which makes sense. Somebody comes in, they have some acute problem, they have a sore throat, they're sick, they don't want to talk about their drugs and alcohol. It's something that comes up in the context of a wellness visit, something a more comprehensive type of visit. So that could be playing a role in some of these as well. All right, so in terms of the implications, pre-screening patients for substance use at every visit involves minimal additional time. It's two questions. It's part of the triage. The nurses do it when they do blood pressure, when they ask them if they've had their flu shot. Okay, so it really doesn't add much time to the visit, but it really increases the disclosure rates when we start looking at this and drilling down in the data. Okay, so we need additional research to validate our findings. Again, this is a rural population in one region of the country. Whether or not it would apply in Los Angeles or some of the other places where ESPRT is being done, I don't know. We need to start looking at that. But if the findings hold true, obviously it has implications for SAMHSA's recommendations about annual pre-screening.